Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:02 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 13th, today being Friday. It's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. It has been rather eventful. In the stock markets, the Philippines was the first market to move to a new all-time high this week. Now, it's really quite overbought in the short term, so there is a strong likelihood that it is going to at least consolidate in the region of the peak. But it's against the background where the vast majority of people have expressed at a minimum caution and at an extreme, really very bearish opinions. This is encouraging. The ASEAN region remains the high growth area, and it's also an area where you have a rising middle class, improving governance. The Philippines has been rather exemplary in its recent performance, but you have fairly steady conditions across most of the higher growth ASEAN countries. Elsewhere in stock markets, Wall Street and Europe have also rallied rather impressively over the last 2 weeks. When you look at a market such as the Euro Stoxx 50, it's rallied up to test the region of the 200-day moving average. It's also testing the October peak. Now, that's an interesting area because the market is a little bit overbought in the very short term, so there is potential for a little bit of consolidation in this area, but it really needs to sustain a move above this area for the Euro Stoxx to be about 2500 to really suggest that the demand component is back in the driving seat. Most of all, we need to see most of these stock markets in North America and in Europe holding their progressions of higher reaction lows since their October or November low, whichever is relevant. And so far, they've been doing that. In Latin America, we're seeing that the majority of markets have found at least short-term support. Brazil has probably been the best of them. It shares very similar characteristics with some of the better performing European markets, in that it has rallied back up to test the October peak and the region of the 200-day moving average. The 60,000 area for Brazil is also rather important. It represents the lower side of the overhead top formation, so it really does need to get back above that area to really start to bolster medium-term bullish prospects. So this is very much a case of will it or won't it for some of these stock markets. They've done well in the last couple of weeks, particularly since probably the last or third week of December. They've had a good run over the Christmas period and continued into the new year, but now it's time to really decide where they're going to go from here. The banking sectors, particularly those in North America, have also been doing really quite well. Now, today's results from JP Morgan were about in line. They were down on the year, but that was expected. The S&P 500 banks index pulled back rather sharply initially, but has recouped the entire loss, and it's been rather encouraging over the last few weeks. The index has held a progression of higher reaction lows since early October. It's pushed on, and it's now above where it was back in late July. So this is encouraging action by the U.S. banking sector. The European banking sector has at least paused around the current area. It's been ranging here for about the last three or 4 months. This week we saw that yield curve spreads right across Europe surged higher for the vast majority of the more troubled European economies. The exception was Greece. The spread between the 10-year and the 2-year in Greece is negative 132 to 135%. That's 13,000 basis points. Today was also notable in that Greece's creditors broke off discussions with the country, and that raises the increasing likelihood that the country is going to default. It's been a virtual certainty for a while now that you're going to have a deeper haircut on Greek debt, and it remains an open question as to just how much money its creditors are actually going to get back. Whether Greece stays in the euro or not will probably be of its own choice. Certainly, in a default scenario, it is probably better off within the euro. The Eurozone is probably better off with Greece in, because this was a pretty dismal week for the single currency. It rallied well yesterday. It gave up the entire advance in here today. The trade-weighted euro index has been down for 9 of the last 10 weeks, and this week is going to finish out the week on a negative, having looked really rather better yesterday. It's an oversold trend. There's a lot of momentum behind it, so it could go a bit further in here. It's due a rally at some point. But the next piece of news that people are expecting are imminent downgrades for countries such as France and Austria and a number of others. Germany is expected to hold on to its AAA rating. Gilts moved up by 0.75 point in here today. They've hit a new high now. Gilts are up a 0.5 point. They're not far off a new low in the yields. We're talking small number of basis points. US Treasuries are back to the 145 area. The peak in US Treasury 30-year Treasuries, I think, was around the 146 to 147. So we're seeing that a number of these what are considered safe haven bonds are getting renewed interest in here. And it's coming at a time when stock markets have had a really quite a good run and are back to the first area of potential resistance in here. So a little bit of consolidation for stock markets is probably on the cards, and these sovereign bonds have been attracting quite a bit of attention. Now, in the peripheral bond markets, Spanish yields were particularly weak in here, so there was quite a bit of demand for the Spanish bonds yesterday at auction. They sold double the amount they were expecting to, and yields have been coming down for consecutive days. Now, they're at the lower side of the range. They bounced a bit in here. That's probably also factoring in the move that we've had in the French bonds. Gold has rallied on consecutive days. It's back up into this 1650 area. That's where it opened this morning. It's down about $13. It's had a good run in the last 2 weeks. It's back above its 200-day moving average, only just, but still there. It's been consolidating in this region over the last couple of weeks. It needs to do more. It really does need to get back up towards that $1,800 level, consolidate in that region to give the pattern a bit more balance. Right now, it doesn't look like it's capable of supporting a significant move, and by significant I mean that it's going to go back up towards the highs and break out and then run some more. It doesn't look like it's about to do that right now. It does need some additional time to build support in this area. When one looks at that weekly chart, gold was really quite overextended up there at $1,900. It pulled back sharply, it rallied, and then it pulled back sharply again. So that isn't confidence inspiring from the perspective of a medium-term investor. Now, gold has been best bought following reactions. We've certainly had a reaction. It's back in the region of a potential area of support, which is the 200-day moving average. But if you strip out the 200-day moving average and just simply look at the price action, it's unbalanced looking. It does look a bit top-heavy in here. It needs more time. It needs to really build support in this area to convince people that there is solid demand supporting this market. That's going to take time. Elsewhere in the precious metal sector, this was a good week for platinum. The market rallied from $1,400 to $1,500. It was also quite overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. It's at least partially unwound that. It has further to go to fully unwind it. It's become a little bit overbought in the very short term, and it's encountered at least short-term resistance in the region of $1,500. Silver is currently in the region of about $30. It needs to do quite a bit more than it has already done to really suggest that demand is back, excuse me, back in control here. In the rest of the commodity complex, industrial metals have all at least found short-term support. They were pretty much all a little bit weaker in here today, but not by a great deal. Copper in particular has rallied impressively over the last couple of weeks. It has a very similar chart pattern to some of those stock markets. It's back towards that first area of potential resistance. It needs to push back above its October peak, sustain the progression of higher reaction lows to really confirm that demand is back in the driving seat for the medium term. A number of the other industrial metals had become oversold in the very short term, and they have at least found support in the very short term and are potentially unwinding oversold conditions relative to their 200-day moving averages. The grain and bean complex was quite a bit weaker yesterday following the WSDE reports, and they were a bit weaker in here today as well. Corn was limit down yesterday, it was down 12 in here today. Soybeans was down 24 and a quarter, and wheat was relatively unchanged. Corn has got that overhead top formation, and it's flirting with the $6 level in here today. A move very much below where it is right now would complete a type 3 top. So it's in an area where if it's going to rally, it would want to be getting about it in this particular case. If we take a step back and look at the themes that are out there, the concern for the vast majority of investors over the last few months, and indeed the last year, has been the Eurozone. And the Eurozone's crisis has been mishandled. There has been a stunning amount of refusal to cooperate, of countries looking after their own individual interests in what is supposed to be a cooperative type of environment, where the Eurozone has classically formed attempted to form consensus. There has been an increasing amount of polarization. There has been a refusal to address the situation with a view to a long-term solution. And that type of uncertainty has been taken on by the market, and we've seen that spreads for a number of government bonds relative to German bonds have moved out to rather extraordinary levels. And in the last year, we've seen that Spanish and Italian spreads have gone right back up to where they traded prior to accession to the euro. So we've had waves of austerity. Now, since we have had Mario Draghi take over at the helm of the ECB, the tone has changed somewhat. He's taken a much more proactive attitude to the Eurozone. He's cut interest rates twice, and he sold 450 billion euros worth of three-year bills to the banking sector before Christmas. There's every likelihood that he's going to sell some more in the next few months. The potential for inflation to be a problem in the Eurozone is fairly muted. That means that as a region that has an inflation target and a central bank that has one mandate, and that is to ensure price stability, then they're going to be given a free hand if inflation is no longer a worry. And if deflation rears its head, you can expect that with Draghi at the helm of the ECB, then it is going to be quite an activist central bank. That would certainly be the conclusion that one could draw from the difference that we're now seeing between the Greek government bonds and the tightening of the 10 to 2 year spreads that we're seeing right across the rest of the Eurozone. So that's a real difference. And I think that's what markets have been waiting for, because it's starting to remove the uncertainty. The great uncertainty about the Eurozone was that people did not know what the various institutions were going to do in the event of a default. Were they going to pull together, or was it all going to go to hell in a handbasket? The likelihood now is that everything is going to be done to protect the rest of the Eurozone in the event of a Greek default. Angela Merkel, in the middle of last year, said that they were going to do everything to ensure or to avoid an unruly default situation, which would, in translating that, it means they're going to do everything to ensure a structured default or an orderly default for Greece. The prospect of a Greek default is rising steadily, and we're starting to see that support for the government bonds of places like Italy and Spain, Portugal and Ireland, and indeed France and Belgium, has increased really quite a lot in the last few weeks. That's really very positive. The European banking sector needs recapitalization. That's really I think the only question now is to what extent and when's it going to happen and who's going to provide the money. But it's going to have to happen one way or the other. Those banks are going to need to be rationalized, they're going to need to be merged, and then they're going to need to be recapitalized. That's going to take some time. This crisis isn't going to be over anytime soon. And there are a number of European countries that are in recessions right now. But we're aware of the problem, and I think people have become increasingly aware of what the problems are. The fundamental problems in the Eurozone have actually been there for a decade. Everyone knew what the problems were. You can't simply have one monetary policy and excuse me, 17 fiscal policies. We're going to have a lot fewer fiscal policies. So we know what the solution is. The uncertainty in this situation is decreasing. That's going to provide confidence. Stock markets found at least medium-term support in the region of October or November. They've rallied rather well. This is our scenario for a short, sharp bear market back in the middle of last year has played out. It looks like that short, sharp bear market has ended. The question now remains as to how quick the recovery is going to be. We are starting to see encouraging signs. Certainly, when one looks at the global picture, global growth is expected to be in the region of about 2 to 3% this year, potentially even more. And companies that are leveraged to global growth, particularly those that cater to basic needs such as food, beverages, toiletries, cosmetics, are doing very well indeed. The number of companies that of shares that have pushed on to new highs, not just new recovery highs, but new all-time highs or new multi-decade highs in the last few months, there's an incredible amount of commonality. These are shares that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer. Whereas prior to the big pullback in July, there was a stunning amount of commonality in that just about anything leveraged to synchronized global economic growth was doing well. Capital goods companies pulled back extraordinarily sharply back in July, and those that were leveraged to the growth of the global consumer held up better and were some of the first to push back above their MAs, push on to new high ground, and are now consolidating above their previous peaks. Capital goods companies are leveraged to or have a correlation with the growth of the global economy. Now, a lot of the Eurozone is in recession right now, but the USA does not look like we're going to have a double dip in here. If anything, it looks like growth is picking up, And while unemployment is a lagging indicator, unemployment coming back down is certainly good for sentiment. Companies have a remarkable amount of cash on the sidelines. They haven't seemed ready to deploy it. A number are attempting to encourage investors by increasing their dividends. We've characterized the last decade as a process of valuation contraction and rising dividend yields. We've had the valuation contraction for much of that period of time, but yields have been pretty slow to advance, and that is probably likely to change. When you have such a large number of companies with such a large amount of money on the sidelines, they're going to do one of three things. They're going to pay it out in dividends, they're going to invest it in expansion, or they're going to invest in mergers and acquisitions. Mergers and acquisitions look to be rather attractive in here. The majority of stock markets have pulled back rather sharply. There are probably some high quality companies that could be picked up today at quite a bit better prices than they would have been a year ago. So M&A is likely to be an increasing trend in 2012. It's probably going to require government to take a more proactive attitude to getting companies to invest, to really get them to move some of their assets out of savings and into creating jobs. I wouldn't rule that out, but what we need is improving governance. And governance has been deteriorating for quite a long time in the USA and in Europe, also in Japan and the UK. The fiscal austerity that we're getting in Europe at the moment was necessary to attempt to balance the books. The USA hasn't grasped that nettle just yet. That we're With US Treasuries up here at 145, or just a bit lower than that, and yields at historic lows, one has to ask the question, when are the big questions going to be asked of the US government bond market? They're not being asked at the moment. This continues to look like a demand dominated environment. But the USA's deficits are non-trivial, and they're going to have to be dealt with sooner or later. If the Eurozone crisis is deemed to be contained by the second half of this year, then there's a likelihood that we're going to see some of investor attention moving over to the US government bond market. US Treasury yields have been trending lower since 1980. They're close to historic lows. They have plenty of room to bounce and still be within the confines of a consistent downtrend. They'll need to sustain a move above 4.5% to 5% to really indicate that an important low in yields is in. That's a very big move in terms of price action. So whereas we can look at this market and we can say that it has quite a lot of the characteristics of a bubble, particularly one that is about to pop. The top of every major bull market is represented by an explosion in supply. And that is no less the case for government bonds as it was for mines in the 1970s, or the Nasdaq shares in 1999 with so many IPOs. So we've seen the explosion in supply of bonds. Demand has so far kept pace, not least because the government is buying its own paper. That's not a situation that can continue in perpetuity. So we can look at this market and say that it remains a demand-dominated environment. We can look at the trend and say that it remains comparatively consistent, although these prices are up here at the upper side of their range. The first downward dynamic is likely to suggest that that supply is coming back into dominance, at least in the short term. But we can also take a step back and we can look at the bigger picture and say, well, this has all the characteristics of a developing bubble that has not popped yet. We can't be blown off our stools if when this market eventually does pop and where serious questions begin to be asked. The US has the ability to contain its deficits, but it's going to require some very tough decisions. The oil market is certainly going to be instrumental to that. The USA can be energy independent in the next decade by developing its vast resources of unconventional oil and unconventional gas, by migrating a larger proportion of its energy consumption from oil to gas. The country could become energy independent. Without exporting such a huge chunk of cash every year to fund its energy consumption, that could help to solve the deficit problem in a pretty short order. But it's going to require some very tough decisions. It's going to require a real commitment and a joined up thinking approach to energy policy. There isn't a guarantee that that is what's going to happen. So it remains an open question. When we look at the Asian region, China has been deliberately attempting to bring down its property prices. It's succeeding. It hasn't done anything yet to arrest the slide. It's going to need to cut the reserve requirements on its banks, not just by 0.25% or 0.5%, but by multiples of 1% to bring it back more in line into what would be characterized in other countries. And that would be good for the stock market. Valuations are low in here. The wealth effect isn't going to be trivial with property prices coming down. I remember I was sitting on a plane flying to China a couple of years ago. I was talking to he was a logistics manager from Dell. He'd just been over in Ireland. And he was telling me that he had all of his money invested in Shanghai property. He had 23 apartments, and that he had absolutely no diversification. That he was continuing to buy new apartments because that was the really sound investment. Now, to anyone who lives in somewhere like the USA or in a number of markets in Europe, that sounds like bubble talk. And there is no doubt that Chinese property had become remarkably expensive, and particularly when one compares it to incomes. So there's plenty of room for property prices to come down. That is probably going to fall hardest on some of the luxury goods consumers. But for the rest of the middle classes, particularly those that are attempting to get onto the housing ladder, then this is very good news indeed. China's fate is largely tied to motivating the savings of its consumers. Much of the talk that we hear is about China's state savings, about the massive surpluses that the government runs, and about the large foreign currency reserves. But Chinese consumers have an incredible savings rate. They need to be encouraged to get out there and spend and to develop the consumer economy. That's where the growth is. Now, they're going to be encouraged to do that if they have to save less for healthcare, have to save less for their own retirements, to put money aside because there isn't really effective social insurance. So improvements in those areas would certainly help to unlock the savings rate in the Chinese economy. There is efforts underway to do just that, and there is massive investment in the Chinese healthcare sector. Those are positive developments. This isn't a trend that's going to play out over a number of weeks and months. These are potentially even decade-long trends. The stock market is cheap in here. Particularly the A-share market is sensitive to official, I suppose, policy in Beijing. Policy hasn't really changed just yet to a position that is supportive of the stock market. It certainly can't be ruled out. But we do know that the stock market is cheap. We do know that it has found at least short-term support. But it will need to break its progression of lower rally highs. It will need to push back above its 200-day moving average to really suggest that demand is returning to dominance beyond the short term. We're probably a lot closer to a bottom than many people suspect, I think. India has really failed on a governance front over the last year. The stock market has been trending lower. Banks are beginning to recover in here. They led on the upside, they led on the downside. They have moved to a position of outperformance relative to the index. Tata Motors is emblematic of some of the more successful of the Indian companies. It's also moved to a position of outperformance. So while the governance situation has been deteriorating, inflationary pressures should also begin to start moderating, and the RBI should be able to start lowering interest rates, which should help to support the stock market. China and India are the two big population centers in Asia. They're by no means the only population centers in Asia, and they have enormous potential to grow over the coming years, and indeed decades. We're in the greatest urbanization in history. The global population went from mostly rural to mostly urban in the last couple of years, and that ratio is going to be skewed more in favor of the urban population in the next decades. So the growth of the global consumer is a secular theme. Some countries have better demographics than others, but what we are seeing is that the consumer culture is alive and well and thriving in an increasing number of countries, not just in Asia, but in the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America as well. Companies that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, not just in one country or region, but globally, are going to do better than the market. That's certainly been the lesson that we've learned in the last 6 months. Those that pay an attractive dividend and have reliable dividend payments fall into that autonomy class. And the autonomies are increasingly representative of a change in investor perceptions. A number of these shares have been ranging for the last 10 years. They're emblematic of the valuation contraction that we've had for the last decade, particularly on Wall Street and much of Europe. They're now turning to positions of outperformance, and we're seeing an increasing number of them breaking upwards out of these long ranges. That's really very positive indeed. That looks to be complete. I don't believe it's incorrect to start thinking about these companies in terms of completing long-term basis. Long-term ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and these companies can go substantially higher over the medium to longer term. I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.